You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for coming despite tornado watches and thunderstorm warnings and really quite nasty weather. But now that you're all inside, outside has become sunny and nice. But I'm very happy to be able to welcome you. This event is the second in a monthly series of cooperative research and event organization between Brookings and Foreign Policy Com called the Deep Dive. And so I'm very, very happy that Susan is here and going to moderate. We have a great panel this afternoon. Susan will introduce it in more detail. Josh Meltzer, who's joined us recently, is both an economist and a lawyer. Homi Haras, the deputy director, who will give you more of the developing country perspective. And then Jeff Schott, whom I think everybody here knows, who's one of the leading thinkers and opinion makers really on this topic. I unfortunately have some other commitment that I have to go to, but you know, these things are taped, and so I will listen to it hopefully over the weekend. Let me just say a few words. I think the topic remains extremely important. Trade and growth and development have been intimately linked over the decades. And when I look at the trade area, and I don't want to preempt what the panel has to say, of course, but there really is, you know, good news and bad news. The good news, I think, when we look back at the crisis, at the big economic crisis of 2008, 2009, 2010, is that despite, early trouble and countries passing restrictive procurement legislation here and there, and a feeling that, you know, to protect jobs, there may be a rush to protectionism. I think overall, when one looks at the world, there has not been such a rush. I mean, despite the worst economic crisis since the 1930s, overall the world trading system has actually held up. There have been here and there things, but, you know, one cannot say that it has collapsed with the crisis or that countries gave in to massive protectionism. And I really do believe that the WTO framework, the dispute resolution mechanism, the fact that as far as trade matters are concerned, really all WTO members accept these mechanisms and submit to that shared sovereignty has helped a lot. And in that sense, you know, it wasn't that much in the news. It wasn't as much in the news as the financial sector and the Financial Stability Board and all that. Partly it's because there were, to some degree, less problems, I think. The bad news is that, you know, the Doha round has been languishing. There hasn't really been any progress, as far as I can tell. Now the countries are meeting as we speak in Geneva and tomorrow to see where we're at. But it's really been a very frustrating, lengthy affair that seems to have led almost nowhere. And so in that sense, I think that's really bad news, because the multilateral framework seems to be really in danger. If nothing comes out of this, you know, all this effort, all these meetings and so on. And I think this is going to be at least part of the topic today. I guess that... And it's, unfortunately, it reminds me a little bit of the climate negotiations also, you know, the big kind of effort at the single undertaking with many, more than 100 countries present is very, very difficult. And what seems to be happening is that some regional dynamics, or maybe FTAs, bilateral arrangements on trade, seem to have more movement in them than the overall universal multilateral framework. And I think one question that comes up in this context is, you know, can we use this? Is this usable? Is this useful? Can one link the multilateral framework to the more regional frameworks and even to bilateral FTAs instead of degenerating into the famous spaghetti ball? Can one put some order and some logic and some harmony into a system where maybe instead of a grand, you know, big overall undertaking, there will be more of that? And can the WTO, in addition to the role of protecting what has been achieved, can the WTO play a role in streamlining this and making sure that what gets agreed in a minilateral framework or in a bilateral framework, you know, isn't kind of undone. It doesn't undo what has been achieved on the multilateral front. So to me, that those are some of the really important questions. With that, I hand it over to Susan.
I want to thank you for the warm welcome. Brookings has been a terrific partner. We are now on our second monthly installment of the new Deep Dive series, and I think it's far exceeded even our expectations for it. The original idea and vision is that we would convene together with Brookings each month a deep dive conversation on an issue that really was at the intersection of Washington and the world, and in a way that helped us think about the new arrangements that are being developed and reimagining the connections between Washington and the world. And I can't think of a subject better than trade to launch us on that conversation this month. It is not only very high on the Washington agenda at the moment. If you go up to Capitol Hill, you'll hear conversations not only about the World Trade Organization, but about not one but three pending free trade agreements that the Obama administration is close to concluding with Colombia and Panama and South Korea. These are leftover agreements that have been pending since the Bush era. And so we have the intersection of that occurring on Capitol Hill at a time when President Obama is eager to position himself and trade as sort of a domestic political issue, a domestic jobs issue. At the same time, you do have the renewed conversation about what the future of the Doha Round, now in its 10th year, is going to be. And so I think you have both a very global discussion about trade at the moment, as well as an American political conversation that makes this particularly well-timed. And not only do we have the very smart in-depth paper by Josh Meltzer that you'll hear more about today, but on foreignpolicy.com, the conversation continues with sort of senior global decision makers on the issue of trade, so that we also feature a piece by the WTO's Director General, Pascal Lamy. We have the senior Republican member of the Senate Finance Committee to talk about the free trade deals. We look at individual aspects of trade, whether it's agriculture or the unlikely effect on the world's fish of free trade conversation. So I think you get a sense of the broad range of interests that come into this particular monthly iteration of our collaboration. So it's a fun venture, and we hope that you'll all not only read these articles but participate by commenting on them, by spreading them around, by being part of the conversation as well. And we will make sure that we have plenty of time for your questions today after we get our panel going. So without much further ado, quick introductions to our panelists. Joshua Meltzer is not only a fellow here in the Global Economy and Development Program at Brookings, but he was also actually a practitioner. He was the first secretary for trade policy at the Australian Embassy here in Washington, which I think is a unique qualification for someone bringing to the table. And he has really framed our discussion this month, and you'll hear more from him about his paper, which dives into the future of the World Trade Organization and makes some very provocative points. My guess is that we don't all agree on all of them, in fact, which should make for a more lively conversation today. But it really looks at the balance between this new network of regional and country-to-country free trade agreements and the connection that they have to a World Trade Organization that's still struggling to find out what its, you know, the next generation of global consensus is going to be. So we're thrilled to hear from him today. He'll be followed by Homi Karas, who is a senior fellow and director, deputy director of the Global Economy and Development Program here at Brookings. He has a star-studded resume as well. Was a member of the working group for the Commission on Growth and Development that was chaired by Professor A. Michael Spence, and was previously the chief economist for the World Bank's East Asia and Pacific region and director for poverty reduction, economic management, finance, and private sector development. A chapter in his resume I'm particularly interested in. In 1990 and 1991, he was a senior partner with Jeff Sachs and Associates, advising governments in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union on transition. So he brings a wealth of knowledge from around the world to this conversation. And we're also joined by Jeffrey Schott from the Peterson Institute for International Economics, who's, I think, been a visiting lecturer just about everywhere and has also been a practitioner in a way that brings invaluable insights to this conversation. During the Tokyo round of multilateral trade negotiations, he was a member of the U.S. Delegation. And he's also been a member since 2003 of the Trade and Environment Policy Advisory Committee for the U.S. government. So we're thrilled to have all of them today. And we'll start in by asking Joshua to sort of give us the context in which your discussion of the WTO and its future is taking part right now. Where did you see that we were entering this story?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. And I just want to say thank you and I've enjoyed the working with Foreign Policy on this paper. And in fact, we were commenting just before this event started about what perfect timing it is, of course, intentionally. I mean, there's been so many, I think, near deaths and false dawns with regards to the Doha round. And it's hard to say whether this is one or the other. But it certainly has focused attention on what's going on at the moment. So it seems like a really timely opportunity to sort of discuss, the WTO and some of the key challenges facing it, and thinking about, what we can do about it. So the paper that I've written essentially, looks at what are these key challenges, and essentially. Discusses the sort of importance of the WTO, strengthening the WTO's role in international economic governance as kind of response to these challenges. But in the process of actually going down this path really requires us to address concerns about the WTO's legitimacy. So what are the challenges? Well, obviously there's, the inability to complete the Doha round, but really this is sort of a window into some fairly fundamental changes that are going on in the international trading system. And two of the key ones, I think, are sort of, certainly there have been the proliferation of free trade agreements. And the other has been the sort of the changing economic balance of power caused, in particular by the growth of China. And this in important ways, has really fed back into the Doha round. So, for instance, as countries have basically managed to get some increased market access through free trade agreements, this has had a tendency to reduce incentives to compromise in the round. And in terms of the growth of large countries such as China, this has presented opportunities in terms of new markets, but really also challenges in terms of what increased Chinese imports might mean for domestic industries in some countries. And really, in important ways, the Doha round has really been unable to deal with these changing dynamics, which is really why we are here today, where despite sort of repeated political commitments to completing the round this year, the differences still appear to be unbridgeable. And even as we speak today, there's discussions possibly going on in Geneva about what next. So the inevitable question is, what does this mean? I mean, if the Doha round is finally, formally, declared over, or if some type of alternative overtakes it, what does this mean? And, one obvious consequence is lost, global economic benefits, in particular,